This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, a Massachusetts high school reeling from a student suicide won't publish the honor roll anymore. And two more congregations split with the Episcopal Church over elevating a gay priest. Joining us today from New York is Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, is in Chicago. We've also got Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University. He's in Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks for being with us. And let's talk about the high school honor roll. I'm sure that all of you were lovely overachievers who would have always made the honor roll. But after a student suicide, a high school in Massachusetts is no longer going to publish the honor roll students' names in a local newspaper. The principal of Needham High School said he wants to reduce student stress level in, quote, this high expectations, high achievement culture. But at least one parent doesn't believe the change is going to do much good.
I know the principal is really committed to trying to reduce the stress. I'm not exactly sure that, not publishing honor roll students can really accomplish that.
Glenn, you are a professor. Are you responsible for the mental health of your students if you grade them badly? Or what is the responsibility? You know, obviously this is high school and not college. What should the school have done?
Yeah, it's a tragic thing. These kids are under tremendous stress. I've got a son who's applying to college right now. These kids are under tremendous, their parents are under tremendous stress. It's a social status issue. An explanation has to be made in the community that I live in if your kid doesn't get into Harvard or Yale or some such place. And it's really out of hand. You know, there's a serious dilemma here because comparative evaluation isn't a useful instrument, right? I mean, if you want to motivate, if you want to discriminate, and this is what this is about, somebody's going to be on the honor roll, somebody's going to be on the dean's list, somebody's going to be valedictorian, someone's going to get into MIT, et cetera, and someone is not. And as your previous segment suggested, you know, we're in a global context. This is a competitive environment. You know, these Asian kids are under tremendous stress. There are cultural differences. So, I don't know what to do. In the wake and aftermath of a suicide, that this school might have suspended the honor roll is probably a humane and decent response. But the underlying problem is a very serious one.
Laura, do you think this is just giving in, or is this a smart decision to save lives?
Well, I don't think that the school thinks they're giving. I think they're trying to do something to sort of level the playing field and deal with some of the inequities that Glenn points out. I just don't think it's going to be, it's a drop in the ocean. It's not going to be very effective. You mentioned, Farai, you know, all of us are honor students. Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, I think that in my community growing up on the South Side of Chicago, it was very important to recognize and celebrate achievement on all kinds of levels. And one way that happened was in the newspaper. And one of the ways I remember first coming into contact with community newspapers was looking for those lists and those names. And if that gets young people, motivated, if only so they can see their name in the newspaper, if that gets young people even reading a newspaper, I think that that's a positive impact. And I don't think that taking that honor roll list out of a newspaper, whatever community it is going to change the system that this, what Glenn calls a comparative evaluation system, where everything is based on achievement, where you can't get into the Harvards, where you can't even graduate from high school unless you get a certain number. We've got to really completely dismantle that system, and this is just a Band-Aid.
Michael, what does this say about our ability not just to ask kids to achieve, but also to expect that all kids can achieve at a high level? It's sort of like that, you know, idea of Lake Wobegon where all the kids were above average.
This says that the people who are in charge of this particular school are being ridiculous. This is dilettantism. It's anti-intellectual. It is ridiculous. Why not abolish grades if people were concerned about the self-esteem of students?
Some schools have, actually.
Yeah, some schools have. I offer no apologies or regrets for having been an honor student. And I think that people ought to be honor students, and people ought to be able to compete and to say, yes, I did succeed. What is wrong with that? There can't be anything wrong with that. Can you imagine newspapers, for example, not publishing achievements of sports teams? People compete in sports, and they excel, and they want to be celebrated, and they want to be recognized for their achievement. What's wrong with being recognized as being an intellectual giant? What if the newspapers decide not to print the spelling bee champions? this, you know, life is a competition. It's about successes and failures and learning from both failures and successes. Now,
let me ask Glenn, I
just want to say one more thing. Suicide is a complex subject, and we cannot blame a suicide on either the grade or the lack of grades. It's a very complex subject, and it is, I think, it is short-sighted, it is silly, it is ridiculous, it is dumb to abolish either grades or to abolish the honor roll because of a person's suicide. This is a dumbing of America. We're turning our democracy into an idiocracy.
Well, that's strong language, Glenn. What about parents? You know, you have a child who's preparing for college. What do you say? Do you say you have to bring home the best grades? You have to bring home the best grades you can bring home. I'll love you no matter what, but you better get
exactly.
those grades. I mean, what do you mean?
I think you say the latter. I mean, come on, now we're talking about parenting. I'm not going to claim to be an expert, but I think you tell your kid you love the kid no matter what, okay? You also tell your kid that life is tough. I mean, what Michael Myers was just saying is true. I don't disagree with what he was saying. I mean, life is tough. It's a competition, you know? So there's a management problem here. These are powerful emotions. This is a, you know, this is a very delicate thing. What I tell my kid is do your darned best. The failure will be that you didn't try, okay? I know what you're capable of, okay? If he comes with C's, he's capable of B's and A's. I know that. He knows that, right? He's not doing his best. So that's the issue. The issue is he being responsible, and is he, you know, taking this tremendous opportunity that I would say God has given him and making the best of it. So that comes down to really a kind of spiritual thing and a kind of sense of the kid's identity. I think that's what parenting is about, but then I'm not an expert on parenting.
Well, Fry, I would jump in and say I'm certainly not either. I don't have any children, but I think that, you know, obviously parenting is the most important ingredient here. But I think I would go back to what Michael said earlier about sports scores and look at these newspapers. We're concerned about whether or not a little blurb, a little list of honor roll students gets into a newspaper. Well, that's not what the newspapers, and that's not what society, that's not what our system is valuing. They're valuing things like sports scores. They're valuing entertainment and celebrity. And that's the stuff that the kids are really gravitating to more than being on the honor roll. And that's a really big problem that we haven't really addressed.
All right. Well, we're going to turn away from this right now. But for anybody who's just tuning in, we've been talking with Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University, and Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea, and we're going to keep proceeding with this fine NPR program. Talking about something else at the educational level, there was a really tense criminal case. Two members of a college fraternity were found guilty of felony hazing yesterday. Two members of the Kappa Alpha Psi chapter at Florida A&M University were convicted by a jury that deliberated for 6 hours. They whacked a pledge with wooden cane so hard he passed out from the pain, had to have a huge hematoma removed from his backside. It's the first test of a new state hazing law, and the jury did not convict three other fraternity brothers. There's been a lot of conversation in African American fraternity and sorority circles with some people sending out emails saying, you know what, this is just the way it is. You know, this wasn't hazing. This was just part of the ritual. Michael, what do you make of this case?
This was hazing. This was felony assault. Period. I'm tired of people saying because I'm not a member of, haven't been a member of fraternity, I don't know anything about assault. This is assault. This is a guy who was a pledge and he was struck, caned, as you say, more than 90 times. It required 25 stitches. His eardrums were injured. And even then, he didn't quote unquote snitch. Even then, he didn't tell. Even then, he got in a car and drove miles and miles and miles to go to his parents and to try to get help for his medical condition. And it was his father, who, as I understand, a former frat himself, who snitched. This is a terrible situation that must be addressed. And I'm glad that Florida, as other states, have anti-hazing laws that make such assaults a felony, and they were convicted, and now they must be punished.
Laura, we're talking about a historically black college and a historically black fraternity. Is this going to shake things up in terms of codes of loyalty that exist, you know, obviously not just on black schools' campuses, but in any kind of tight-knit community?
Well, I think that your first point, Farai, is well put, and that is that this is not just a black problem. This is a problem of the Greek system nationally on every college campus that emphasizes the Greek system is barbaric. There are many positive assets to joining a fraternity or sorority, you know, community building, the community service emphasis where it happens. But I think this is an example of showing that the good really outweighs the bad. Since when does beating the hell out of somebody encourage loyalty, encourage a positive value system? I think that these kinds of activities, I think, bring out the worst in young people's insecurities. They encourage pack behavior. They encourage conformity. Why do we want our young people to think that they have to conform and submit to violence in order to achieve it? And in many ways, I think it erodes self-esteem. Many of these sororities and fraternities are classist and racist. The reason why African-American fraternities and sororities exist is because the white Greek system has not been very welcoming. But the same kinds of activities happen in those. I think that the system should really be eliminated.
Glenn, I'm thinking of, what was that Spike Lee movie with the fraternities and sororities? I'm blanking on the name. School days.
D-A-Z-E.
D-A-Z-E with...
Well, you know, this... I mean, we're getting right down to, you know, the nitty-gritty here, as they would say, because it is an issue about this tradition within African-American society of these fraternal and sororal organizations. I'm talking about the Alphas, I'm talking about the Kappas, I'm talking about the Deltas and the Qs and the AKAs, et cetera.
Talk about them.
And we all know, coming up in the African-American community, the kind of strength of these organizations stretching back over generations. And the and everything that my colleagues have said here is correct. It's barbaric. This hazing thing is just barbaric. I mean, just straight out, flat out. Mm-hmm. It's intolerable, ought not to be intolerable. And what Laura had to say about the fact that the Greek system as such is really deeply questionable, I agree with completely. At institutions of higher education, this is all about exclusivity, about bond, about brotherhood. I mean, not only was it racist in the larger Greek system, but they had skin color prejudice in these African-American mm-hmm. fraternities that was outrageous. I mean, it was all about somebody being better than somebody else, or I'm in and you're out, or we got this secret society, we got our secret handshake, we got our secret tattoos. It's corrupt, it's barbaric, and we ought to be rid of it. That should just be directly said. Now, I say that knowing that there are hundreds of thousands of listeners who are going to be offended, and I really don't mean any offense, but I mean, what kind of institutions are we going to have, and what are we about, quote, as a people, close quote, is the kind of question I wish my African-American detractors would address themselves to when, you know, we're talking about this conversation.
Well, you know, I can be sure this will show up in our letters. I want to squeeze one more topic mm-hmm. in, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Episcopal Church, two Virginia churches are reacting to a decision 3 years ago to consecrate a gay bishop, and they've now aligned with the Anglican Archbishop of Nigeria. His name is Peter Akinola. He opposes homosexuality, told the BBC of the split, "Once there's a crack in the wall, you are likely to have all sorts creeping in." Now, the acceptance of gays in the church has splintered off several congregations, but these are huge congregations, and I suspect not majority black or not majority African immigrants in America. It's a really fascinating twist on religious affiliation. Laura, what do you see happening here?
So the twist you're talking about is that a denomination or a congregation in Virginia would want to ally itself with a Nigerian denomination. This there's not a whole lot of cultural opportunity or a cultural commonality in those two congregations, but they'd rather go with black folks than go with gay folks is really what it comes down to. The argument they make is that the scripture says that being gay is wrong. The bishop in Nigeria has been so adamantly against gays, he has been willing to support gays going to prison if they engage in sexual activity. But the real bottom line here is money. There's now a big fight within this denomination about who gets the bucks. If these two particular denominations in Virginia, for example, move off and affiliate with another community in Africa, who gets the $25 million or so in property and land that those churches own? And so it really does, with all things church, always it does come down to bucks.
Glenn?
Well, you know, modernity encroaches is what a professor would say. In other words, you know, the wheel turns. I mean, in other words, human societies are changing our practices with respect to sexuality. That's just a fact. And in the 21st century, gays are going to be equal people in civil standing in modern societies. That's going to happen. Now, I think it should happen. Now, a communitarian church, way of life, the way we've always done it, these are conservative institutions, and they're going to lag behind the change in modernity. And we're seeing this little schism within the Episcopalians, and the irony of an African bishop serving as a missionary to an American flock, which is, in effect, what he's doing. We're seeing that, but that's just kind of one instance of this larger fault line, this larger shift that I'm talking about. I think we need to keep our eye on the ball here, and the key issue is the distinction between civil and communitarian arenas where things might happen. I'm talking about the law. Now, people should be able to marry. They should have equal rights and standing. These are constitutional issues of individual freedom. What a church decides to do when they read their special book and then come to some communal understanding about what it means, in a way, that's their business. And if these people want to go their own way, you know, I would say, with some irony, God love them.
Okay, well, Michael Myers.
Well, this is not so far away from the other topic about private association in terms of fraternities and sororities. This is a religious association, and they're in a church fight, an old, good old-fashioned church fight. You know, as Glenn might say, God bless them. But, you know, there are people in the church, in the Anglican Church, who oppose the woman being the presiding bishop in the United States. There are lots of people in the church who oppose the consecration of a homosexual as bishop in New Hampshire, Gene Robinson. And there are lots of people who oppose homosexuality. That's their, quote unquote, I guess, right to believe. But they are fighting against modernity. They're fighting against equality. They are on the wrong side of history. And these folks, you know, ought to be ashamed of themselves. Somebody
all right,
say
gonna,
amen.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, and Glenn Lowry, Professor of the Social Sciences and Professor of Economics at Brown University. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for being here.